time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Jonathan Jones reporting. Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe has ignored a demand from the ruling party that he step down by Monday. Parliament is now expected to open impeachment proceedings against Mugabe on Tuesday, but that process could be long, complex, and unsuccessful. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg, with reporting from Sebastian Mofo in Harare.
When Zimbabwe's military sent tanks into the capital and took Robert Mugabe into custody, it was clear they wanted a quick resolution to the growing discontent with the longtime president. But nearly a week later, with Mugabe refusing to resign and Parliament threatening to impeach him, they could be on a long and complicated path with a formidable opponent, Mugabe himself. Lovemore Maduku teaches law at the University of Zimbabwe. He says impeachment can be very complex.
When we say an impeachment in the Zimbabwean context, it actually means a trial, and then you want them tried for that. If you find them guilty of that thing that you have accused them of, you then dismiss them from being president.
Mugabe has never been one to shy away from a fight, and as the only leader independent Zimbabwe has ever had, this is one he has spent decades training for. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
After years of being shielded from deportation from the United States, while their country continues to recover from a devastating 2010 earthquake, tens of thousands of Haitians are now going to lose that security status. Temporary Protected Status, or TPS, is going to be revoked for at least 50,000 Haitians living and working in the U.S. That protection will expire on July 22, 2019. This is VOA News. The United States will redesignate North Korea as a state sponsor of terrorism, a move meant to put additional financial and diplomatic pressure on the totalitarian government. President Trump made the announcement Monday at the White House.
Should have happened a long time ago. Should have happened years ago. In addition to threatening the world by nuclear devastation, North Korea has repeatedly supported acts of international terrorism, including assassinations on foreign soil.
The president called the Pyongyang government a murderous regime. North Korea now rejoins Iran, Syria, and Sudan on the State Department's state sponsors of terrorism list. Kenya's Supreme Court ruled unanimously Monday that Uhuru Kenyatta won last month's presidential election, striking down arguments that the law was not followed in conducting the repeat poll. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Chief Justice David Maraga announced the decision following 3 days of hearings.
The presidential election of the 26th October is hereby upheld, as is the election of the third respondent.
The head of the court dismissed the two petitions filed by a former lawmaker and two human rights defenders. The October vote was a rerun of the August presidential election. Uhuru Kenyatta was declared the winner of the initial vote. But the Supreme Court ruled the result was invalid because of irregularities. After the ruling, some Kenyatta supporters took to the streets to celebrate the verdict. Protests and clashes broke out in pro-Odinga neighborhoods of Nairobi after the verdict. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Argentina's Navy says a multinational team is working now in the South Atlantic Ocean to try to find a submarine missing since last week. Brazil, Chile, Uruguay, Peru, Britain, and the United States have joined the search. There are 44 crew members on board. U.S. visa consultations could soon resume in three Russian cities. The TASS news agency quoted the U.S. Ambassador John Huntsman as making the announcement on Monday. He said the visa interviews in the near future may be resumed at consulates in St. Petersburg, Yekaterinburg, and the Urals, and Vladivostok in Russia's Far East. Huntsman, according to TASS, said, "We're trying to do everything possible, and I hope that in coming weeks we will be able to effectively issue visas." He said he was attempting to restore confidence in U.S.-Russia relations, even as the U.S. continues its sanctions against Russian individuals and companies. There's more on these and other late-breaking and developing stories from around the world, around the clock, at voanews.com and on the VOA News mobile app. I'm Jonathan Jones reporting from the world headquarters of the Voice of America in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party is expected to introduce a motion in Parliament today to impeach President Robert Mugabe.
The party has instructed the chief whip to proceed with impeachment processes against Comrade Arajie Mugabe, as it has not received the anticipated confirmation of his resignation from the Speaker of Parliament.
Simon Kayamoyo is Zimbabwe's information minister. Constitutional experts say an impeachment proceeding could probably take a couple of months. Meanwhile, Army Chief Constantine Chiwenga has called on Zimbabweans to remain calm. And Liberia's Elections Commission Monday rejected a petition to hold a rerun of the October 10th presidential election.
Fortunately, the law provides that we can take an appeal. The only thing we can say is that this matter is going to eventually go before the full bench of the Supreme Court.
Wilmon Pei is the national chairman of Liberia's ruling Unity Party. Somaliland's main opposition party says it will not accept the results of the country's November 13th presidential election. And we'll tell you about the recently concluded second annual ArtX Lagos. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party is expected to introduce a motion in Parliament today to begin impeachment proceedings against longtime leader Robert Mugabe. This came after the 93-year-old president did not yield to a party ultimatum to resign as of midday yesterday, Monday. Here is Zimbabwe Information Minister Simon Kayamoyo with the announcement.
Pursuant to the decisions of the ZANU-PF Central Committee, entered on the 19th, of November 2017, recalling Comrade Robert Gabriel Mugabe from the position of President and First Secretary of ZANU-PF, the party wishes to announce that Comrade Arajie Mugabe has been formally notified of the decisions this morning. As for that, the party has instructed the Chief Whip to proceed with impeachment processes against Comrade Arajie Mugabe, as it has not received the anticipated confirmation of his resignation from the Speaker of Parliament.
That was Zimbabwe Information Minister Simon Kayamoyo. Meanwhile, constitutional experts say President Robert Mugabe's impeachment process, which starts today, Tuesday, is likely to take a couple of months, while at the same time, Mr. Mugabe remains in power. As Patricia Mudadigwa reports from Harare, the ruling ZANU-PF does not appear to have the votes necessary for the party to single-handedly impeach the 93-year-old president.
The constitution stipulates that the president can be removed from office for serious misconduct, failure to obey or defend the constitution, willful violation of the constitution, and inability to perform the functions of the office due to physical or mental incapacitation. Constitutional lawyer Machoba Nengube says while the constitution is clear on the process of impeaching the president, it will take a long time to force the president to leave office.
The Speaker of Parliament has to call the National Assembly to be in session, whereas the Senate president also has to call the Senate to be in session. So the total membership of both the Senate and the lower house of assembly, someone should then move a motion for the impeachment of the president, and then someone has to second. Once it has been seconded, there has to be a vote of half of the total membership of parliament to support such a motion. If they do get those votes, then they have to select 9 parliamentarians from across the political divide, who then should constitute a committee that has to investigate the question of whether the president should be removed from office.
He says ZANU-PF does not have the numbers in parliament for impeaching the president.
You note that the current composition of parliament, ZANU-PF does not have a two-thirds. I mean, there are ministers who are also parliamentarians who are reported to have been in custody of the army. There are parliamentarians who are said to be outside the country. I think the other parliamentarian, the deputy minister of health, died in Europe recently. So what it effectively means is that ZANU-PF if it has to succeed in this endeavor, has to get the support of the political opposition.
Paul Mangwana, ZANU-PF Deputy Secretary for Legal Affairs, thinks the impeachment process will be much shorter, about 2 days. He also says that ZANU-PF needs the opposition to join the impeachment effort and that his party has already reached out to them.
This should take a maximum of 2 days. We are expecting the motion to be moved tomorrow, the committee to be set up tomorrow, and hopefully by Wednesday, because the charges are so clear, we expect that by Wednesday we should be able to vote in Parliament.
An independent constitutional law expert, Lloyd Kuvea, says impeachment is not an easy process. He expects it to take longer than the 2 days. It is also not clear if the main opposition, the Movement for Democratic Change, will support impeachment. The impeachment process began after President Mugabe failed to meet the ZANU-PF deadline for him to resign today. Zimbabweans have expressed shock and anger over Mugabe's decision to stay on as the president. Different groups, including the war veterans, have called for another anti-Mugabe demonstration in Harare tomorrow. The picnic organizer, Briggs Bomba, says they will meet until Mugabe resigns.
People's will is very clear. The message is that Mugabe must go, and the whole country is united on that one particular issue. What has united people is to say Mugabe must go as a first step towards our dream for a better Zimbabwe.
Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Patricia Mudadigwa.
Zimbabwe's Army Chief General Constantine Chiwenga has called on Zimbabweans to remain calm. The general speaking Monday also said there has been contact between President Mugabe and his sacked Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa. General Chiwenga assured Zimbabweans that the army is confident to take Zimbabwe out of what he calls its circumstances and set it on the desired development trajectory.
We are heartened by your display of composure, order and discipline during various marches which occurred at the weekend without any public violence. Meetings with His Excellency the President and Commander-in-Chief of the Zimbabwe Defense Forces, Comrade Robert Gabriel Mugabe, have gone on in an atmosphere of mutual respect, and several guarantees have been made. As your defense and security services, we remain seized with the operation codenamed Operation Restore Legacy. We are confident to take our beloved country out of its present circumstances and set it on the desired development trajectory. Following that rest to the nation by His Excellency the President of the Republic of Zimbabwe and Commander-in-Chief of the Zimbabwe Defense Forces last night, we have made further consultation with the President to agree on a roadmap on the prevailing situation in the country. The Zimbabwe Defense and Security Services are encouraged by new developments which include conduct between the President and the former Vice President, Comrade Emmerson Dambudzo Mnangagwa, who is expected in the country shortly. Thereafter, the nation will be advised on the outcome of talks between the two. In the meantime, His Excellency and Commander-in-Chief of the Zimbabwe Defense Forces, Comrade R.G. Mugabe, has started processes towards a definitive solution and roadmap for the country. As this happens, we as the Zimbabwe Defense and Security Services urge Zimbabweans to remain calm and patient, fully observing and respecting the laws of the country for the sustenance of the precious peace we should never lose. Your defense and security services will keep you informed of any new developments as they occur.
That's Zimbabwe Army Chief General Constantine Chiwenga speaking Monday in Harare. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butt in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 21st. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. Liberia's Elections Commission on Monday rejected a petition to hold a rerun of the October 10th presidential election for political parties, including the ruling Unity Party and the Liberty Party, had asked the commission for the rerun on grounds the October 10th election was marred by massive irregularities. But the commission's chief dispute hearing officer said the parties did not have sufficient evidence to prove their case, saying, "Fraud is not to be presumed, but must be proven." Wilma Pei, the national chairman of the ruling Unity Party, says the petitioners had expected the commission to rule against them because the commission is acting as both defendant and judge.
As you know, our electoral system is such that you have the National Elections Commission next being the defendant, at the same time being the one to whom you complain, the judge and the defendant. And, of course, the hearing officer today ruled, as we had anticipated, that he was going to dwell more on what he thought was necessary. But what we believe is that he didn't mention anything in his ruling about the violations that we have pinpointed, violations of the election law as well as the Constitution of the Republic of Liberia. Fortunately, the law provides that we can take an appeal. And the only thing we can say is that this matter is going to eventually go before the full bench of the Supreme Court.
You ask for a rerun. The way I'm reading it is the matter of evidence. How much evidence did you provide to the Elections Commission?
We have provided substantial evidence. The evidence was overwhelming. We had a preponderance of evidence as required by law to establish a case.
You say you will be going to the Supreme Court. What are your chances?
Well, no, we accepted to the ruling today, and it is required that an appeal has to be taken to the full board of commissioners of the National Elections Commission, after which, if they confirm or affirm the decision of the hearing officer, then we can now go, as also required, we can go on to the Supreme Court. But what we are doing first is to first take it to the board of commissioners. I think that process, our lawyer started already by accepting to the ruling today.
I'm told that you have 48 hours to go to the board.
Yes, that's what the law requires, 48 hours to go to the board. And of course, that will happen immediately when the ruling was handed over.
Let me ask the question I asked to Councillor Charles Bramskin, your compatriot, in this challenge. Some people say that the length of this challenge is that you, the Unity Party and the Liberty Party and those other people with you are trying to delay the electoral process so that eventually you can create a constitutional crisis for an interim government.
No, I don't think the Constitution of Liberia has any room or provision or situation that can lead to an interim arrangement or extra constitutional arrangement. I think what is important in this country is that the foundation for peace and democracy in this country is in upholding the rule of law. What we are saying is that we must respect our law. The law says you have elections within 30 days period. The commission has a responsibility, the statutory and constitutional responsibility, to be able to listen to all complaints. That is exactly what is happening. When that fails to happen, as it was in previous instances, say number one in 1985, that's when you have a difficult situation. But in this case, there is never ever going to be any extra constitutional arrangement because we are operating within the limits of the law. The Constitution is there and is clear about that. Of course, this is the first experience we are having where a possible runoff between the top contenders didn't take place because there are complaints to be addressed.
Is your party in the meantime making preparations, say, for a possible runoff election?
We are prepared and we are preparing for and we are ready for any eventuality. Once the final determination is made, once the Constitutional Court can come up, because, of course, we don't trust the Elections Commission, as we have said repeatedly, because even long before the investigation started, the chair of the National Elections Commission came out to dismiss, to just denounce all of the allegations as fabricated and said the parties were making empty comments and all of that. So obviously this is the same commission that is investigating and that is supposed to determine whether or not our claims are legitimate.
The request that was denied is the request for a rerun of the October 10th election. People say, where would you get the money to do that, to have a rerun?
Well, I don't think that's the spirit and intent that our constitution has. What is important is to firstly determine whether what we are claiming actually occurred. I think that is the fundamental issue that has to be addressed. When we talk about rule of law, that has nothing to do with money. It's about respecting the principles of our country, the Constitution of the Republic of Liberia. If it is determined that the Constitution of this Republic and the electoral laws have been violated, then money is not an issue.
Mr. Pitt, thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, my brother. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bote. Thank you very much. And let me just say quickly that we are committed to upholding the rule of law. The issues of governance of this country in the past have always been tied to breaking the laws of the country, flagrantly ignoring the laws of this country. And for us in this generation as political actors, we are not going to compromise that.
Wilmer Pay is the national chairman of Liberia's ruling Unity Party. You're speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Somaliland's main opposition party says it will not accept the results of the country's November 13th presidential election. Faiza Roble is a leading Somali political analyst.
The chairperson or candidate from the second party, Wadani, finally said he will not accept the results simply because his remarks included like fraud taking place against him. So that is what he has expressed, and it seems like all reconciliations and mediation behind the scene seems to have fallen apart.
Who is mediating and what are they mediating?
The election commissions, which represented all the different parties, were this last few days in a sort of really round-clock meetings with all sides to just resolve the issue, and the losing side, Wadani, meaning the National Party, seems to have resigned to a position where they are not willing to change. And that is, they adamantly argue that there have been widespread fraud in the election process. Now, the other side completely disagrees with that attestation of Wadani.
For the purpose of our listeners, put this election in context in terms of Somaliland and what was at stake for this election.
So I think Somaliland is suffering from the same syndrome of division that we have had in the last few years in Kenya. If you recall, the Kenyan problem is not because of fraud per se, but because of mistrust between the two largest ethnic groups, the Luo and the Kikuyu, whose conflict has been seen since the 1960s. Now, with Somaliland, the three major clans that are in Somaliland have had their shares of winning or at least holding the presidency, except the group that the current loser comes from. So although the immediate issue is saying that they have seen fraud, but I think the underlying mistrust is rooted in that clan system within Somaliland. Now, what would happen if they don't go along with the results? I think I'm afraid there may be a serious division, and that may even derail Somaliland's long-appreciated peace within. But I just like to add a caveat in the sense that Somaliland has proven for the last 20 years that they know how to resolve the conflict within, and we hope that they will resolve this current conflict also within. But it doesn't look good from what I hear now.
Somaliland is semi-autonomous in relation to Somalia. Could you explain to our listeners how this works?
Yeah, so in 1991, when Somalia fell apart due to a very sad civil war, Somaliland, which is a former British protectorate, unilaterally said that they seceded from the rest of Somalia. To this date, after 25-plus years, there hasn't been a single country, either in Africa or in the IGAD region countries or in the international world, that has recognized, and the world community seems to have agreed, that Somaliland, with all its gains socially and politically, needs to go back to the fold of Mother Somalia and resolve their issues. Just what Taiwan has been to the Chinese political situation, so is Somaliland to Somalia, i.e. claiming to have seceded from the rest of Somalia, but no one granted that status to them.
Faisal Roble is a leading Somali political analyst. You're speaking with me from Los Angeles. The second annual ArtX Lagos recently wrapped up, and the attendance nearly doubled that of last year, jumping from 5,000 to 9,000. Founder and director of the art event, Tokini Peterside, tells Ricky Schreier why she is excited about the future of contemporary African art, especially in Lagos.
It sort of validates our decision to build this platform in Lagos and in Nigeria. It shows that there is huge demand for the kind of content that our galleries, our artists, etc. produce. So to have that level of validation with, you know, negotiations coming out in the thousands to see this project was really exciting. Sales-wise for our galleries, it was also a much stronger performance this year than last year. I think last year when we launched, it was at the height of Nigeria's recession and there was a lot of uncertainty around the downturn. This year, yes, we are still recovering from the recession, but what we found was that our galleries, whether the local Nigerian galleries or the international galleries from South Africa, from Ghana, from Mali, etc., the quality of the artwork that was brought to showcase to our audience really resonated with our guests. So we're really excited about the future for ArtX Lagos because it's become clear to us that we are more than an art fair. You know, we really are this platform that allows for the celebration of contemporary African art right here in Lagos. And our dream is to continue to bring together as many stakeholders as possible from around the continent.
You mentioned content and you mentioned contemporary African art, obviously. Can you tell me a little bit about what that means to someone who might have no experience with contemporary African art?
So, I mean, in Nigeria, there is no lack of showcases because, you know, we are African and our artists who are producing art today are predominantly producing contemporary art. Now, if you were to come to Lagos any one weekend, there's likely to be probably half a dozen exhibitions going on, or private openings of artists, solo shows and group shows and the like. Artists are exhibiting drawing, painting, sculpture, photography, video art, the full spectrum of mediums of art that exist out there today.
Is there a city or a place that's a hidden gem where there's a movement going on that many that some people maybe don't know about?
To be honest, the hidden gem is Lagos. It's why we're doing this project. There is so much creativity, there is so much innovation in the arts right here in Lagos. And the interesting thing is that many people within Nigeria are even unaware of the potential that lies in their midst. Lagos is such a phenomenal hub of the city. Yes, it's a massive commercial capital on the continent, but it's also a huge cultural capital. This is where some of Nigeria's brightest artists, they all come here to make it their home. You have young artists, you have established artists, mid-career artists, even artists from other countries choosing to settle here. And in many different corners and pockets of the city, you have phenomenal projects.
That was Tokini Peterside, founder and director of ArtX Lagos. She was speaking to Ricky Shryak from Lagos, Nigeria. Briefly, before we leave you, summary of Africa news. Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party is expected to introduce a motion in parliament today to begin impeachment proceedings against longtime leader Robert Mugabe. This came after the 93-year-old president did not yield to a party ultimatum to resign as of midday yesterday, Monday. And that is it for this Tuesday, November 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as Post Editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burris, I'm James Barty, wishing you a lovely day.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.